Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this edition of Locked On Grizzlies as we start off trade deadline week, as we are still on the All-Star break, but we have got lots and lots and lots to talk about trade-wise over the next little bit, and we're going to start off with a friend of the pod who I'll tell you about in one moment. My name is Peter Edmiston. I'm happy that you are with us here on this Tuesday. We always take the risk of taping these things, and you know, God help us if anything happens in the interim, but we're going to try. But I wanted to make sure that we could do it because Matt Herdlicka, we're trying to find a schedule that fits for both me and Matt so we could talk about this is tricky, but we did. And I'm thrilled that we could because Matt, as you know from Grizzly Bear Blues and from his Twitter handle at The Real Herdlicka, is, and that's H-R-D-L-I-C-K-A, by the way. Matt is very active in trade and CBA discussions, typically has excellent ideas and thoughts about some of the ramifications and even some of the deeper CBA level stuff that, you know, many of us don't think about at the moment of a trade. Matt's usually pretty good at going through all of that. And so I have to start by saying, hello, Matt. I know this is a fun time of this. I simultaneously love and hate this week for probably the same reasons you do.
Boogie.
Okay. I can't hold it off any longer. I was going to do like a perfunctory hello to you.
No.
If you'd like to do that. No.
Yeah. Go.
Okay. You don't even want to do that. Fair enough. All right. Forget about that. I hope you're well. Now this Boogie thing. I'm trying my best to not curse too much on my podcast because I don't want to get the explicit label, but whoo! I mean, so you got the particulars of this thing. You have Boogie and Omri Caspi to New Orleans for Buddy Hield, Tyreke Evans, the 2017 Pelicans first, which is top three protected, amazingly enough, and the 2017 Sixers second round pick, which should probably be, you know, one of the better second round picks. And only Langston Galloway is thrown in there as well, although he may be waived. I don't know. He's got a player option, so I'm not sure how that works. But apparently he's not part of the Kings' plans going forward one way or the other. And that's it. That's the haul for Boogie. You didn't see this at the time. You woke up this morning to this news. What do you make of this?
I think that it is – I'm a little different than everybody. I don't kill the Kings for doing this. And it's a bad trade for them. Let me put it this way. It's not the best trade that they could do. I'm sure they could have found something else. But this is kind of like a case study in how you can make bad decisions if other things are influencing the decision. So, you know, they've got the owner who is – has been it firmly, we're not trading Boogie. I think a lot of other people in the front office have wanted to trade him for a while. And I don't remember where I saw this or heard this, but, you know, if you kind of view it from the lens of Vivek finally gave in and you don't know how long you have to trade him before Vivek decides, no, we're not trading him. You know, you kind of have to just take the best thing you can get. So that doesn't make it better, but at least it's a reason that sort of, you know, you recognize that, like, there was an infinite amount of time that they had. Well, if they – and I want to say one more thing about that is if they get out of the All-Star break and they decide – like, they were going to offer him that max – super max extension for, like, $30 million a year.
Right.
Once they do that, they can't trade him for a full year after that. So effectively, if they didn't trade him now, they were going to have to wait until midway through 2018. Like, basically, wait, no, they would have to be like 2019. It would be
2019. Yeah.
Yeah. So at that point, you don't know what's going to happen if Vivek is like not going to let you trade. You might be stuck with him and $200 million on your books. Again, I would prefer that. But I think some people had kind of they wanted to get this done and just kind of hopped on it. But and I say all that just as kind of like context, because it's still like not the best trade. But I'm not going to kill the Kings for doing it, sort of.
Well, see, here's the thing. So, I mean, this goes back to the discussion about the trade last week, which, you know, I thought may have well ended up being the biggest trade of the deadline, the Serge Ibaka to the Raptors deal. It's a similar thing to me. You know, I think you're more of a, you view each trade as it is at that moment. You know, what can you do? Here's where we are right now. Here's the best we can do, or here's what we're looking for, and this is what the trade is. You know, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you sort of blanch at looking at it over the spectrum of an entire series of trades. Like is that right? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So like, for instance, this Boogie trade does not make the cap clearing trade that Sacramento had previously done with Philly, where they gave away their 2019 first. This doesn't make that trade worse. That trade was always bad because this was a possibility. Always. They were always maybe going to trade Boogie. And if that is maybe the case, then that first trade is always bad because, you know, let's say 30%, 50%, 10% of the time, they're going to trade Boogie and give away a 2019 pick that is going to be great, you know?
Right. And see, all of it to me, and I can understand that, and I get that perspective. I'm not knocking it at all, but I come from I look at it more on the spectrum of the whole thing. I think both ways are right. I think both ways are, you can look at it both ways. They're not mutually exclusive. You know, I think you can look at it within the spectrum of the entire organization. I would be far more comfortable with the Kings doing something like this. Ideally, you would get more of a return for a theoretical top 15 player who's still young and all this. Ideally, you would get more of a return, but I would be okay with the Kings doing this if the Kings were a rational organization, if the Kings were a rational group, if they had shown any propensity whatsoever to draft properly, if they'd shown any propensity whatsoever to plan properly, if they hadn't spent the last two seasons trying to build in a relatively short-term fashion a future around Boogie, that cap clearing trade that you talked about. You go and you use that cap space to sign Rajon Rondo, who is now gone. Kosta Kufos, who is going to be traded most likely. Marco Bellinelli, who they traded and managed to get a first round pick back for. So good for them, but he's still no longer part of that team. That's what you ended up getting. You could have stretched Carl Landry and signed two of those guys probably without having to give up that pick. You give up that pick in order to do that, theoretically, to appease Boogie. You've drafted Nick Stauskas, who looks identical to Buddy Hield. You've drafted Ben McLemore, another shooting guard who has flamed out and done nothing for you, you know, long term. Jimmy Fredette, another shooting guard, again, you know, similarly scoring and a guy that you fall in love with. I mean, Buddy Hield's 23. So you're building around this thing. Like, I get the idea that this is like the package. It is what it is. You got to get, if you just dead set, we're not giving him that money. We just cannot organizationally trust this guy. We've got to get rid of him. Fair enough. And that package and that possibility in the hands of some other owner would make some sense. But the fact that Philly took that same package reportedly without Buddy Hield and wouldn't do it for Jahlil Okafor tells you just where that package is on the pecking order in the NBA. So that's my issue with it, Matt. I mean, the trade itself is pretty much indefensible, especially with the top three protection. So even if you manage to get lottery magic, you don't even benefit from lottery magic in this whole thing. But that's fine. But to me, it's that much worse in the context of what the Kings have done over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, you know, and I saw some reporting where that Okafor package, I think that the protection was like much different. I think that there was like top 20 protection on the pick. So that changes, you know.
Well, yeah, if that's the case, then that would definitely change.
Yeah, and healed. But so I guess I think this is a bad trade, but I don't think it's terrible because like, I think all that I need in this trade for it to be sort of equal value is another first from the Pelicans, which, and then also this pick should be unprotected, but really we're talking about a 1 or 2% chance there, you know, of the lottery gods striking, but still you want that 1 or 2%.
Exactly. That is still a thing. The fact that they it's another example where it feels like a GM just asks Vlade for something and he gives it without even having to. Like, you wouldn't, like, there's no way that they would have said, nah, we're not doing the deal. Like, there's no way they would have said, if you don't protect it, we're not doing it. Or right, even, like, top one protection. Like, just the one shot at it. The even more fractionally unlikely. Maybe. But the fact that he's like, oh, okay, that seems fine. Like, that's crazy to me.
So, I think for me, let's just keep the protection in there. If there was another first, or if it was like Etuan Moore instead of Langston Galloway,
right,
I would be pretty much saying, you know what, that's pretty fair trade. Like, all things considered, call me crazy. I'm also a Boogie pessimist. I in the last year, I've gone from optimist to pessimist. At the beginning of the year, I put Boogie in my list of guys that I don't like as much as everybody else. And I hated myself for doing it at the time, but I just don't.
And I hated you for doing it as well.
Well, you know, that's fair. But, you know, I don't see him in the same light that everybody else does. I think that he takes off some things from the table and puts quite a bit on the table, but I think he takes some off. So really, like, if I'm talking about, for me, for my own perspective.
Now, hold on. Just real fast. When you say take things off the table, are you speaking strictly on court, off court? What do you give me like
everything,
what's he taking off the table?
I mean, if your goal is to win games, it's not to have the most productive players, it's to win games. So I don't think that anybody can look at the Kings organization and say it's all the Kings or it's all Boogie. Like, who to blame? So I think if you're parsing out why are the Kings a 30-win team, Boogie gets some blame and so do the Kings. And you can argue about the percentages one way or the other. But I don't know. I think that he is a deplorable defensive player. Going to work and trying to win games in a competitive environment when you have a coworker who is not only your best player, but also like kind of seems like he hates showing up. You know, we don't know all of the details surrounding like what goes on behind the scenes, but
we're about to.
They're going to tell us everything. Oh, yeah. Here's all the reasons we traded him. This is why it makes
sense. It's going to be an absolute poop show. It's going to be we're going to dump every little detail is going to start leaking out left, right, and center.
I just think it's all of it. You look at the whole player. You look at how. He deserves some blame for them only winning 30 games for the last couple of years. You know,
without a doubt. Oh yeah, no. Without a doubt. I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
Even as maybe the biggest Boogie apologist out here, I'm not trying to exonerate Boogie entirely from all the technical fouls and all of the disinterested defense and all of that stuff, the bad body language, the locker room confrontations with reporters, etc. Here's what I would say, though, Matt, and I think this is something that, having kind of seen, you know, in the locker rooms and just kind of been behind the scenes with the team for a while now, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that can either empower negative personalities or can force them to kind of come on board with your organizational culture. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is something where the Kings, to me, have fallen down completely. You know, this is where you have the Spurs, who have been able to get productivity out of guys that have been total head cases, your Steven Jacksons, your Dennis Rodmans, and at some point they get rid of them, but they have been able to, you know, use them in productive fashions, because there is a way within your organization to do that. But the Kings, their PR folks have not allowed and coddled Boogie. Organizationally, they have coddled Boogie, and they have created, you know, just like you see this, you know, spoiled, rotten teenager that has no control. That's what they've done. And I'm not saying that he's not to blame. Of course he's to blame for all that, but you can't look at it strictly in the context of him, just like you can't look at that teenage kid that's a brat that you've given a bunch of cars to, that keeps wrecking the cars, keeps making all these mistakes. You can't just say, oh, that teenager's, that's just a bad kid. Well, no, I mean, that bad kid came from somewhere. And if Boogie had been drafted into a different organization, different things may have happened. I mean, he was fine at Kentucky under a different types of situation with Calipari and that whole thing. You know, this will be the chance. I mean, this will be the test. I don't think the Pelicans have a great organizational culture, but it's better for him to share a locker room at least with another star on his level. Yeah. Anthony Davis, that's going to take away some of the scrutiny, some of the PR stuff, some of the things that he had to deal with. And I think that the best thing about this trade is we'll find out. You know, we'll find out if Boogie all of a sudden snaps into gear, starts playing the kind of defense that he's capable of playing, pays more attention, is more of a threat, then all of a sudden people will say, you know what, maybe it was Sacramento. And if he doesn't, and if he continues to get technical fouls and he continues to screw up and he continues to be a disaster behind the scenes, then you could say, you know what, it was probably Boogie in Sacramento. Just they absolutely had to get rid of him. I like the fact that we're probably going to find that out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's going to be super interesting. And just to circle back to, you know, talking, viewing things like each trade on its own, there's a chance that this doesn't work out for the Pelicans. Like you said, I wouldn't necessarily think of them. They don't leap to mind as like the most stable organization. Although they do have the feather in their cap that Davis and Boogie are somewhat close to being equals. Like, you don't know how Boogie, so they have some chances. So there's X percent of the time this works out and they get the best out of Boogie, and maybe even he plays defense. You know, he could be a totally different player. Other times this doesn't work out and they don't have a huge, huge home court advantage to re-sign him. Like, there's a chance at the end of 2018, if they miss, I still kind of think they're going to miss the playoffs this year.
I think they probably will. I think odds, people have just been like, you know, penciling them in completely. No. I think it's 50-50 at best. I mean,
yes. I mean, at best, they just have so much other competition there. You know, if it was only one team ahead of them, then, you know, that would be okay. But they got Portland to deal with. Dallas is only a half game behind. So let's just put it at 50-50, you know, 60-40 even. So let's just 40% of the time this year, best case scenario, they miss the playoffs. I don't necessarily pencil them in, you know, next year for the playoffs. They're going to re-sign Drew probably. Their team is sort of locked in. You know, they might actually pay the tax if they have to, you know, overpay Caspi to keep him.
Now, could they, let me ask you this. Now, this is where I want to lean on your expertise here. Could they stretch Oshik and create enough space to both re-sign Drew and do a renegotiate and extend with Boogie?
Yeah, so I don't think they can stretch him. And also, I don't think that he would renegotiate and extend. Even just getting an extra year or two out of him would be like, I think that might be the best case scenario, because committing to like a 4 or 5 year deal with him on top of the year he has might be tough. So if you got rid of Caspi, I just didn't do this quickly here, and then you stretch Oshik, so that's three.
So he's got the actual like old school calculator out.
No, that's Excel.
Oh man, I was hoping you were doing it on one of those the tabulating key. No, oh, that's disappointing.
Abacus, it's an abacus. Is what you're hearing. So I think okay. So let's say Cunningham opts out of his deal too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, by my math, and this could be wrong, they are only at about 5 million in space. If they stretch Oshik and Cunningham opts out, and giving Boogie a 5 million bump isn't going to get it. He needs like a $10 million bump to get there.
Right.
Because the cap holds are $800,000 each, and they only have, if you keep Drew, you've only got like 8 people on your team. So, you know, like it just doesn't, I'm sure they could get there, but you're talking about, I think they'd have to give up assets to get there, basically. Like, you'd have to get rid of a Jensa, you know, probably Quincy Pondex or two. And then you could do it, but, you know, you're talking about giving up another first, which is probably worth it to get Boogie to re-sign. But then you also need to know that Boogie would take a $10 million bump next year to add a couple more years, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe he probably would, you know.
That's something that I was just thinking about, you know, as a possibility, because I still think they've got, you know, they've got a pick that they can, that's expendable here. They've got some assets, certainly, you know, depending on how you feel about some of the players on their team, that they could turn into a the possibility of either or maybe both, you know, increasing and bumping up their roster this year and opening up more opportunities next year. I know, I get that you wouldn't want to stretch Oshik. That's not your ideal situation with what he's got left. But I mean, if that's the only impediment, if you can get there everywhere else except that, then I think you kind of bite that bullet. I mean, that's a horrible, that deal has been horrible to begin with. So, you know, what can you do? It's kind of like the Kings, go back to the Kings 2 years ago, you stretch like Landry. and you probably avoid all that pick swapping business and all that stuff that they had to do. So, you know, I don't think they'd love to do it, but I think they would if they had to.
What's interesting is that Sacramento didn't take back any dead salary, which, I mean, it's like half of Pelicans' roster. You know, they could have taken back even Quincy Pondexter. Right. They did not want to take any money into next year. So my thinking is that if you want to look at this like in a wider perspective for the Kings, they're going to start taking bad salary from people. I mean, shoot, they could take Oshik next year for that first. In fact, that could be something that, it, you know, is already being talked about, and just say, hey, we'll take Oshik for a first. Or I would want more to take on him. But, you know, so I guess where we're at is like the Kings are probably going to be a bad salary dumping ground for young guys or picks, and the Pelicans are probably going to be trying to clear some space to re-sign, to get an extra year out of Boogie or two. So
that, it's going to take
a couple days to kind of sort this out.
I agree. My
thoughts are pretty scattered.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with you. And I think we'll have to see. I don't know how this is going to affect, because I don't think anyone really truly in their heart of hearts expected that this big of a domino would fall. You know, I think we all kind of thought it would be Serge Ibaka level, maybe. And for this to happen, it really does change, you know, certainly in the division from the Grizzlies' perspective, Matt. I mean, like, you know, if you have a long-term future of Jrue Holiday, Anthony Davis, and theoretically, let's say, a motivated Boogie Cousins, that's a hell of a threesome, man. I mean, if they could figure out how to play Davis and Cousins together, you know, Davis has wanted to drift more and more out to the three-point line this year anyway. A lot of jump shots. So he's a, you know, major mega stretch four with mega rim protecting possibilities. And he's like a, you know, an uber glorified version of that player that lots of coaches really have wanted to see. And Boogie as an offensive five to take some of that pounding away from him should extend his career. In theory, you find a couple of wing pieces that can just shoot, and that's a group that's going to be tough going forward. You mix that with what the Spurs are going to be able to have and generally build around Kawhi and whoever, you know, whatever their future holds for the next little bit. And the Rockets are set up to be pretty good for a while. For the Grizzlies, I mean, your tandem has taken up 75% of your cap. You know, Conley, Mark, Parsons. I don't know. I mean, that's, yeah, to me, it starts to look a little more grim going forward if those guys can make it work.
Yeah, I think for me, the big story is not this year. It's next year. And the Pelicans, what they do this offseason to sort of solidify themselves in not just hoping to make the playoffs, but like, okay, we have to kind of rubber stamp this team in the playoffs, and maybe it pushes the Grizzlies towards the bottom, you know, towards the eighth seed instead of firmly in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They're kind of possibly missing it. Here's my
question with that, does this change your willingness, if you're the Grizzlies, to do something with Vince, Zach, Tony, your older veterans?
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, that's a really interesting question, because it really just gets at what is out there.
Right.
You know, like you can't trade Zach for a first. I'm not interested in trading Zach for a first round pick. You know, like it just, you reset your that first round pick isn't going to be good for 3 years. And at that point, you've sort of missed the window where you need help. So, I mean, I would be interested in trading Vince as a salary filler for a player who would help this year and next. I think that's more, I think if anything, it probably makes that type of deal more likely, because you think even if Vince signs again next year, like at some point, man, he's just gonna,
it's gonna fall off a cliff. I mean, he's just, it's just gonna happen very quickly. It's gonna be one day an injury. Yeah.
Vince Carter is amazing. It's amazing. That
oh, it is. It's amazing.
Unbelievable.
The guy watching him behind the scenes, man, he just works like crazy. He's stretching. He's doing everything to keep himself in as good a shape as possible. You know, I was talking to him. He told me like it takes him so much longer. You know, pregame, he's got to get to the arena even earlier. But he does it. He's committed to it. It's a credit to his professionalism and his love of the game and willingness to do it. And you know, he could easily retire and take, you know, he's got plenty of money. Dude has been very good with his money, and he'd go and, you know, live wherever he wanted to live and start more businesses, or just you know, go sleep in a pile of money stuffed in a mattress, and he could be just fine. But he doesn't want to do that. I do, and to be clear, I mean, I don't expect, and I didn't really mean like necessarily at the trade deadline, because I don't think Zach would garner any interest at the trade deadline, really. And Tony may, I mean, I can't imagine that he would. I guess maybe, possibly, but it would seem weird to me. You know, I think Vince is the guy for, I want to talk about Vince in the context of a guy like Darren Collison in a second, but I'm really talking about like in the off season. You know, with the context of like, okay, now let's look forward. Let's look at all these teams. You know, should we try to grab this thing and just squeeze every last little bit of juice out of this thing, even if it means, you know, really raging against the dying of the light, looking at all these younger teams, looking at all this, and, you know, knowing that the calculus doesn't really look good for us? Or do we just accelerate the process of trying to shift from this previous Grizzly group to whatever the future holds, even if that means a little short-term pain?
I gotcha. So, yeah, with those three guys, being free agents this offseason, like basically they'd have to get rid of all three to have any space. And you're looking at, I think, like $10 million in space, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a ton.
It's not a ton, but you might be able to do something. I just, I would be more interested in trying to get, like, one thing I've been thinking about is, like, I don't think Tony Allen is necessarily untouchable anymore. At least I wouldn't, like, I would be willing to, deal him for like a future first round pick. And I don't know if they would necessarily, I think in a playoff series it would really hurt, but I don't know in terms of like seeding and wins, like if dealing him would significantly damage. And I don't know the context of the locker room and how quote unquote important he is there. But like, for instance, I wouldn't mind doing something like Tony Allen for Wes Johnson and the very, very distant Clippers pick that would have to kind of be protected. Mm-hmm. Like that makes some sense for them and for the Grizzlies. Cause I just don't, I mean, you're not beating the Warriors this year, but, and then, you know, you kind of got to restock the future coffers, but, you know, I'm not interested in trading him for like the 25th pick in this draft. I mean, getting back to your original point, I think that they're going to run it. I think they're going to try to run it back in the offseason, like just re-sign these guys, if I had to guess.
I think you're probably right. I just think, to me, this adds a little extra, at least a little deliberation before that happens. Now, as far as the trade deadline goes, you know, Vince Carter is the guy that has come up just because his salary really helps to grease the wheels of a few deals that may or may not end up being done. You know, the Kings, now that they've made this move, everything must go. Anybody that's, you know, a veteran and has any value whatsoever, they are likely to be moved in the next 72 hours. If I'm the Grizzlies, does Vince and maybe Jarrell, or Vince and like a Harrison and like a second or something, does that get me Collison?
I don't know. Do you think, I guess the question is, the kind of the idea I've had in my head is, can this team get a lottery pick or first round pick for this player? And I mean, they're not getting a lottery pick for Collison.
No.
He's had, you know, some issues with
the domestic violence thing earlier this year. Yeah.
So, you know, can they get a first round pick for him?
Plus, he's expiring, and, you know, who knows what's the long term value? I mean, what are you going to do with him next year?
And they don't have that. I mean, the Kings don't have that many power forwards on like they don't have a rookie power forward unless you're considering Scala a power forward. So like Jarrell might be something they're interested in. Would you prefer the deal to be Jarrell and Vince or Jarrell and Troy Daniels?
You know, I don't know. I would say that would depend on what else you could do. I do think that Troy Daniels, and we could talk about him in a second more, I think he's probably on the block, and I just don't think it's fit with the needs right now, with Fizdale, with whatever. I just think he's expendable at this stage. So I would probably prefer the Vince deal, but my only pause would be, because I think you could do something else with Daniels, but my only pause would be, you know, those minutes that Fizdale goes to with Vince, as a lot of coaches have done with sort of a security blanket, where do they go? Where do they fall? Are you comfortable with them going to Ennis? Are you comfortable with them going, does Parsons have any hope in hell of playing, handling a little bigger minutes load after the break? Yeah. Those are the kind of questions I don't know the answer to. So that gives me a little pause about Vince. I'd want to kind of explore a similar, you know, maybe a worse player, but a similar player to soak up a few of those minutes in a deal like that. But otherwise, I would happily. I think the need at backup point guard, the need to upgrade over Tony Douglas, the need to upgrade over Andrew Harrison is much greater than anything else they've got right now.
Here's kind of where I'm viewing it. I think they need to proceed as if Chandler Parsons is not going to be able to, like, be the primary ball handler on any unit in the playoffs.
Yep.
So if that's the case, I think they need – the reason I asked that the question that way is I think they actually need Vince's ball handling more than any Troy Daniels shooting. So I would prefer doing the Daniels and Martin deal for Collison because I think they desperately need a ball handler. And having their wing minutes are just so encumbered with guys who can't dribble. They have Ennis and Daniels and TA and just a bunch of guys that just, you know, they just need the ball handling. So if you can get Collison without giving up some of your ball handling, I would actually prefer keeping Vince for the rest of the year, just because, I mean, there sometimes he's the only guy on the team that can dribble, like on the like out there. Mm-hmm. Like you know, you're playing him with Tony Douglas, and like the rest, you know, and Mark, and like Mark's the best ball handler out there, and Vince is second, and Tony just isn't really getting to the rim. I don't know. I guess I would prefer Daniels and Martin for Collison. And you'd probably have to throw in a second round pick, I would think, but maybe not one of the best ones. Like maybe your own second round pick next year or something, to get that done. But I would do that deal.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying, and I think that's a fair point. You know, they do need to make sure that they've got enough ball handling out there. They do put some units out there sometimes that just can't move the ball properly and can't set their offense up the way they'd like to. So I think that's a valid point. The only reason I would exclude him is just simply to I wonder if you could formulate a different deal or do something to make it work. My next question would be, would you include, under what circumstances, I guess I should ask, would you include Wade Baldwin in a deal?
I would not trade Wade Baldwin for Darren Collison. I would.
I'm not talking about that deal because I agree with you. I wouldn't trade Wade Baldwin for Darren Collison. But is there a structure, a deal out there that you think would? Because his name has started to float a little bit here and there. Certain teams are intrigued by his the same reason that the Grizzlies drafted him. You know, the length and athleticism and all that stuff.
Yeah, I would need a starter. I think for me, I would be only interested in dealing him for a starter that is under contract for more than one season. So I think the guy you've talked about and I've talked about before is Lou Williams. I would be on the fence about doing it for Lou Williams. I had suggested Etuan Moore in my column, trade deadline column on GrizzlyBearBlues.com,
Good hype, yes.
But I don't think they're going to trade Etuan Moore now, just because I think that they're probably going to want all the talent they can get down in New Orleans. But I would want a starter quality, because I think Baldwin still, I'm pretty high on him still, personally. But I'm not privy to any of the locker room stuff, or know if he's working, or you know, that kind of thing. But and I kind of view Baldwin and Davis sort of on the same. I see a separation between those two prospects and the rest of the prospects the Grizzlies have. Like I would throw in Harrison or Martin in any deal that gets an upgrade this year.
Yeah, I've had these discussions with some folks behind the scenes, the Grizzlies, and they will, you know, disagree. But I ask them, you know, what's the future? I mean, where do you see where's Jarrell getting minutes? Where is he? I mean, he's just, to me, he's blocked. So I mean, even if he were to develop, and I think that's unlikely at this point, I don't know what you do with him right now. I think it's best to get rid of him while the getting's good, and while you still may be able to get something of value for him, rather than stubbornly keep him and just have him kind of run out the clock and not really end up getting anything for a guy that I just don't see much in the way of a future for, irrespective of whether he could or couldn't. I just don't see that it's going to happen. So I think you have to just kind of be honest with yourself about, you know, where that stands. Some people look at this as like a knock on the player, and it's not. It's just situationally where you're at, you know, as an organization. Do you have minutes? Do you have a pathway? Do you have a pathway? What's the need? What's the position? And I don't see that. You talked about Lou Williams. Do you think he gets moved, and would the Grizzlies be able to put a package together? I think he's, although I don't, you know, the size is obviously an issue, but I mean, he is such a gifted scorer. And if you look up, like I'm looking at his synergy numbers right now, and he is top, like, you know, 80th or better percentile in virtually every category of any kind of play type in the half court game.
How is he on ISO scoring?
He's averaging 1.071 points per possession. That is 86th percentile in the league. He shoots about 50% effective field goal percentage from there, which is definitely upper tier. As a pick and roll ball handler, he is superb, 94th percentile, almost 1.07 points per possession. He's top, like I say, he's top 15% in the league in his possessions plus assists. All of his ISOs, including passes, he's at the, they have a different structure for ISOs, including passes, and then just your own personal. If you include the passes, he's at 92nd
really?
Percentile,
okay.
And 88th percentile in pick and rolls, including passes. So all of his offensive numbers, at least, you know, with this admittedly, you know, makeshift garbage Lakers lineups that he's thrown out there with and all of that, have been superb. So he's worth a fair bet, because he would represent a hell of an upgrade.
Yeah, I would imagine that the Lakers would get a first round pick for him then. I mean, shoot, they might be able to get a lottery protected type deal. So I don't know if there is a deal between. That number about including passes is kind of surprising, because you're thinking, like, if he's passing to a teammate, that teammate probably sucks,
right?
So like you don't normally think that his efficiency would raise, but he, you know, you said he was like low 90 percentile including passes.
His for example, his I mean, he doesn't pass a lot, let's be honest.
Yeah.
On his ISOs, he only passes 21% of the time.
That's true. But he's probably only passing to guys who are wide open. So
but his teammates are shooting 62% on those passes. Mm-hmm. To spot up shooters, for whatever it's worth, and it's not very many, it's like 11, so it's tiny sample size. But they've made a bunch of threes on those, basically all threes on those. And then as far as the pick and roll stuff is concerned, his passes off the pick and roll, predictably, as you pointed out, they drop off quite a bit. The roll man, they're 30th percentile on those passes to the roll man in the pick and roll. 57th percentile to spot up shooters, 27th percentile to the cutter. So his offense off the pick and roll is 94th percentile. So when he does anything, it's pretty elite. But anyone else gets involved, and it quickly drops down, which is you know, a little understandable. It's very, it's a little bit like Marc Gasol's post-up offense, actually, where his personal offense is excellent, and as soon as he passes it, it's in the tank for the Grizzlies. It's very, very bad. So that's kind of a similar thing, except it's for the pick and roll. I would think, I would agree with you, given that he would probably get more than the Grizzlies could offer, but I don't know. If they would accept a Baldwin and Martin and Vince, let's say, something like that, I would do that.
I plugged that into the trade machine, and it says that if you traded Lou Williams and Thomas Robinson for those three players you suggested, they subtract 13 wins from their total, the Lakers have. So so they have negative, they almost have negative wins now. No, but I mean, I think they do deal him just because they need to assure that they keep their pick, which is top three protected. So they have every incentive to deal Lou Williams this year. And so the question is just whether they prefer Wade Baldwin to, you know, the mystery box of a first round pick. And they honestly, they probably prefer a first round pick for him.
So from the Grizzlies perspective, that backup point guard, do you think they'd get something done? Do you think something happens, whether it's Collison? I think Collison seems like that. To me, that deal seems, I mean, very logical and wouldn't surprise me a bit. Are there other guys out there that you think would make sense in that role that the Grizzlies could theoretically go after?
Yeah, I really like Sean Kilpatrick from the Brooklyn Nets. He's kind of a combo guard, but he's signed this year and next for, at the minimum.
Yeah, it's a great deal.
Yeah, and you have restricted free agent rights on him afterwards. And like Peter, living on the East Coast, you end up watching the early games, like the first part of the early games, a lot. And last year, I watched a lot of the Orlando Magic. And this year, I've been watching a lot of the Brooklyn Nets. And I just got to tell you, I think that this guy is really good. And I know how crazy that sounds. But like,
well, no, there are a lot of people who love the guy. I love watching the, you know, I really like watching this Nets team play, actually. Like, I mean, they're not any good, really, but they play really hard considering how bad they are. And this whole Brook Lopez, like even more Marc Gasol-y than Marc Gasol, like he had three threes in his whole career and now he's got like 90, you know, all that, the experimental factor, the fact that they play in so fast, they're an intriguing team to watch just from a basketball perspective. And I agree with you. Kilpatrick stands out when you watch him.
So he would slot in, like, as far as what they need and the time, like contract wise that they need it for, he would slot in perfectly because he wouldn't block Baldwin long term. You'd have him cost controlled for the next year, and then you'd have restricted free agent rights on him after that. And I think he's gettable. Like, I think, you know, for a second round pick or Jarrell Martin, maybe both, you know, I would do it for both. I would trade Jarrell and, you know, maybe the Grizzlies second round pick next year, or, I mean, they even have the 2019 Brooklyn Nets pick. Like, I probably wouldn't want to consider that, throw that in, but maybe I would. It's just like, I think he's gettable, and he could shoot pass and dribble, which this team desperately needs. And he wouldn't block
SPD. That's what I call it.
Yeah. He wouldn't block anybody long-term. I just think it's like the perfect sort of like diet, low budget version of the Lou Williams trade. Sort of the reasonable outcome. The other guy I really like is Etuan Moore, but I just don't think that the Pelicans are going to trade Etuan Moore now. So
at this point now, I think, yeah, Moore is, he fits well with that troika that they've got. And no, I'm with you on Kilpatrick. His synergy numbers are just kind of okay, but you have to factor in, you know, again, that situation really depresses a lot of numbers. And they've been so experimental. Kenny Atkinson does so many different things that, yeah, you know, I don't know that you can get a real good feel for any specific thing with him. So I wouldn't be like totally, you know, turned off by that whole thing. I'm with you. I think that's a good idea. I hear, and I as we're taping this, it's being reported that the Kings are going to waive Matt Barnes in this whole, because they have to waive a player. They because of the nature of the trade, they were over the roster, so they had to waive Matt Barnes, which is surprising because Dave Yeager loves Matt Barnes. If the Grizzlies
he's crying right now, you know, oh my God, press conference and just say Matt Barnes.
Oh, man. This guy's played hard, man. Oh, I love him. Love him. God. Oh, Matt. So if that's the case, could what if the Grizzlies picked up Matt Barnes to soak up just a few of those Vince Carter minutes in a Vince Carter trade? Just not as much, just a few, just a tiny little bit. Does that even – I know, forget the personality stuff. Matt is – it is what he is. But does that then, if he's sitting out there, just sitting out there to be had, does that make you a little more likely to move Vince?
Honestly, I would probably prefer to try to re-sign Troy Williams personally.
Well, there you go. There you go. Maybe you could do that too. You know, he's also still sitting right out there.
He's sitting out there. He's just waiting for the call.
That's just
E-League, G-League dunk contest champion.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Oh, we forgot about those festivities. The G-League, the G-League is out there in full effect. That's embarrassing. I don't want to get into that discussion. Yeah. But anyway, now let me ask you this too. What does Phoenix do? Phoenix is they're sitting out there. I don't know that they've engendered a lot of talk, but for me, like they should be very motivated to do something with Eric Bledsoe, for example, Jared Dudley, you know, who is admittedly, you know, I don't know, his contract is not great, but the guy does have a couple of skills, and in this kind of a league, that you could use him, in certain situations. You know, guys like that, and they've got, you know, lots of different assets in that regard. Are they going to move these guys? Is that going to happen?
I think they move PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they'll, man, if they move Eric Bledsoe. I mean, I love Eric Bledsoe. I have loved him for forever. In fact, like, I think the year he was a free agent, I said, and this was the year that like LeBron and Chris Bosh and all these other guys are free agents. I like went out on a limb and said that as long as he stayed healthy, I would prefer his contract to anybody other than LeBron's that offseason. I don't think they need to trade Bledsoe. I would honestly only trade him if I got a top 10 pick. So you're talking about like something like Orlando. You know, I wouldn't, they have so many young guys and so many future picks that I wouldn't trade him for like, you know, three quarters equals a dollar type thing. Like I wouldn't trade him for, you know, like Portland, for instance, has a couple late round picks. Like they had the Grizzlies pick this year and then the Cavs pick. If they offered both and like something else for Bledsoe, I wouldn't do that. Like I would want a pretty good shot at a good player going forward. For Bledsoe, but like TJ Warren might be able to be had, Leandro Barbosa, PJ Tucker. I think PJ Tucker gets traded for sure.
Yeah, he's a very favorable contract, a little over $5 million expires. You know, and they've got some multiplicity of young parts too that they may want to clarify a little bit going forward. So I think they're a team to watch. You know, I don't know that Brandon Knight in his deal would be. You know, terribly interested in that, but maybe you could find someone. He's young enough that maybe you can convince yourself that he's going to be worth it down the line. Are we going to see finally Boston do something with all these? You know, they're venturing dangerously into Denver territory of, you know, too many assets and too many guys that are just going to be wasted, and you're not going to, you know, you keep thinking you're not going to get value, quote unquote value for. And they all just end up sort of rotting away on your roster and you don't really do anything with them.
Yeah, well, Terry Rozier is just – future all-star Terry Rozier is just incredible. No, I think Boston – I would not have traded the Nets pick for Boogie. I just think that a top three – the guaranteed top three pick this year is worth more than Boogie because you have that player – they have that player literally for the rest of his life. So, you know, you have like a 25% chance at it being Markelle Fultz, and, just with the way that the extensions have been strengthened, I think I would prefer that to having Boogie. So if they do something, it's going to be like, That Nets pick, I would only trade it for like Paul George or Jimmy Butler at this point. I wouldn't deal it for Gordon Hayward. I would want a guy, a knock on top 15 player who is under contract for multiple years. That's the only thing I would trade it for. Would not trade it for Okafor. They really just need to consolidate some of their smaller stuff. Mm-hmm. To get, and I that's a tough deal to make because everybody wants to make that deal. So I honestly think Boston probably stands pat. Maybe does like a future first for the dunked on guys did like a future first round pick for Taj Gibson type thing. And maybe they do like that.
Maybe,
you know?
Yeah. Do you think there have been some Grizzly fans who have suggested, and I have certainly suggested, that the Grizzlies sniff around the Denver roster and see what you can do. Can you make anything work logically, Will Barton, Mike Miller type deal, you know, just from a salary perspective for somebody, Will Barton and whoever? They do have, there are a lot of players that to me seem like you could get them in the right situation. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there are any matches from a Grizzly perspective with some of these guards that they've got?
I'm not a huge Will Barton guy personally, but he seems like the type of, every time I watch him, he does like a couple dumb things that I'm not a huge fan of his. But with that said, the skill set matches what the Grizzlies need. I don't think that Denver, like they just traded for whichever Plumlee. Honestly, I cannot remember which
Plumlee. Mason. It's the Mason. It's the Mason Plumlee. Yeah.
So they just traded for Mason Plumlee and their future cap works out to where they're probably going to re-sign everybody like Gallo. They can't carve out enough space anymore to like really make a difference. So I think that they're probably not going to do a future. They're in the eighth spot right now. And if they do a trade that maybe knocks them out of the eighth spot, I think that would be a tough like PR thing, even though that's probably what they should do. But I just don't, I think that that would be, I think you'd have to knock them over to shake loose anybody that's productive. So like Jimmy or Nelson, I don't think they're going to trade him. Will Barton, maybe. And frankly, just because I don't think it would hurt him that bad if they traded Will Barton.
I think Barton would be an interesting pickup. I like him more than you do. Okay. You know, I think it would be nice story because he comes back to Memphis. Yeah, yeah. That's nice. But really, I think just as a fit, I think he can handle a little bit. You'd have to rein in some of his crazier instincts, but I think it would make some sense, you know, depending on, again, all of these moves are so hard. And like this Boogie deal, to circle back, because we got to wrap it up, but to circle back, like this Boogie deal really goes to show all of us are just, you know, we are whistling into the wind, man. If I had proposed that trade to you,
I laugh at you. Yeah,
you would have been like, "What the hell? Are you serious? Do you think they're going to do that?" No, but then they go and do it. So, what we predict with regard to what teams are willing to do or want to do or anything like that, you know, I think it's fruitless to say that. Plus, you have to think about teams like the Cavs that are probably going to be waiver wire, you know, veteran pickup type teams. Mm-hmm. You know, do they really want to make a move if a guy like Andrew Bogut you think is going to be potentially out there to be claimed? You know, guys like that, you know, are they going to make any kind of like dramatic move, or any of the real contenders going to do anything special? You know, probably not. So all that stuff, Matt, factors in and makes it really, I love doing it and I could do it all day, but it really just shows how fruitless it is for us to even try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. We only get a piece of the picture, and you know, that's one of the things I like about following a team that I'm not, like, I don't cover the Grizzlies. I'm just a fan that writes about them, and you know, right. Mostly stupidly.
No, I wouldn't. I would not say
like
that.
It's just like I like being sort of separated from it because I don't have to deal with, you know, like I'm not too close to the players, and I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. So I try to look at it like unbiased as much as I can, or at least like if I'm being biased about something, I try to acknowledge it. Like, you know, there are just certain players that I hate, not Grizzlies players, but just players in the league that I would just think suck, even though they don't. And I just try to, I fully acknowledge that I'm being ridiculous about them, but I try to separate that out because I find it fun too, to like think about this stuff. One thing you said, the Cavs are actually my favorite Vince deal. Mm-hmm. Like I would
see that. I could see that.
I would love them to trade Vince to a to them. Let them try to go for a championship and, you know, maybe shake loose a second round pick or the rights to the Turkish player they have and just, like, you know, stock up a future asset, let Vince go chase the title, I think. And I would root for the Cavs in the finals. That would be awesome.
I think that'd be a nice fit. And I think it'd be a nice, it would be a lovely story. And who knows? It may well happen. Matt, you will be, of course, prolific throughout this on Twitter at The Real Herdlicka. Again, that's H-R-D-L-I-C-K-A, where you can also find Matt linking to his writings when they come. They are on GrizzlyBearBlues.com as part of the team with Joe Mullinax and Andrew Ford and a whole host of new writers as well. Great resource for you throughout this week, because it's going to be a lot of stuff to follow and to keep up with. So you guys do a terrific job of that, Matt. And are we getting anything from you this week?
Probably not this week. Everybody's getting this podcast this week.
That is worth something. You know, yeah. It is worth what you pay for it, and that's the important thing, right there. No, Matt, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for taking the time, and I look forward to reading and following on Twitter. Good stuff today.
All right, Peter. Have a great day.
Thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies. As always, you can check me out 7 to 10, Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk Sports 56877 FM. Check out Numbers Game in the Commercial Appeal. And you can check us out on Facebook as well. Search for Locked On Grizzlies or go to facebook.com/LockedOnGrizzlies. For those of you, of course, that are big fans of the podcast, let me tell you something. This is a great spot for your company. If you want to reach men between the ages of 18 and 54, this is the place for your audiences. And here's something to consider. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to think seriously about purchasing products they learned about from podcasts. 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcasts. Our rates are very reasonable. Please shoot me an email, peter@peteredmiston.com. Shoot me a tweet @peteredmiston or a direct message, something like that. We can get all the information out to you. I'd love to have you on the podcast, become part of our family, and reach all those great folks out there that are listening. Thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.